515, revised sewer and stormwater rates, charges, and fees in accordance with the fiscal year 2015-16 sewer user rate study. And 516, authorized the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2015 to June 30, 2016, and fix an effective rate.
Mr. Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm going to welcome David Schaff and Jim Hagerman and their teams from the Water Bureau and Bureau of Environmental Services, respectively, to make the presentations today. This is the third consecutive year that we have recommended combined water, sewer, and stormwater rate increases of below 5%, in effect, stabilizing our customers. Thank you. Fulfilling a commitment we made to stabilize rates. I want to begin by thanking the Citizens Utility Board for their outstanding partnership. Based on their advocacy this year, we have recommended restoring full cost recovery of systems development charges, resulting in a further reduction of the BES rate by 0.2%. With that, I'll turn it over. We'll do BES first, and I'll turn it over to Jim Hagerman. Jim?
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Hagerman, Interim Director, Bureau of Environmental Services, and I apologize for having brought more than one slide, but I'll try to work through it quickly.
Sorry.
The proposed rates for this year will fund operation and maintenance of the sewer and stormwater collection and treatment systems, protection of surface and groundwaters, and restoration and preservation of Portland's watershed, including pumping and treatment for 97 pumping stations, two wastewater treatment plants, five city watersheds, and over 2,200 miles of combined sewer, sanitary sewer, and stormwater sewer pipe.
Jim, could you move a little closer to the mic or have
sure.
it move the mic towards you?
Okay. And with Portland Harbor, as we now move beyond the remedial investigation feasibility study toward an actual record of decision, we'll be very involved in that as well. Some budget highlights. We're maintaining our current service level. Our decision packages add about $1.5 million to the operating budget, including enhanced inspections and maintenance. We're adding, for example, 12-year inspection cycle for some high-risk manholes. We're doing some facility planning for emergency management and strengthening the sewer system against natural disasters. We have some money for equity enhancements that we're funding, and we're beefing up environmental compliance and monitoring a little bit. These things add a little bit to the rate increase, but the primary driver, as has been in the past, is the capital program and taking care of the system we have. So we're proposing to collect about $306 million from ratepayers, which includes debt service and cash financing for the capital program of about $200 million. Operation and maintenance is about $120 million. And then everything else, utility license fees and other fund transfers, less revenue offsets, makes up the difference. Moving along to our proposed rates, this rate proposal would have average single-family residential ratepayers paying about $67.60 a month, up about 3.6% from the current $65.25. Of that, sanitary sewer costs account for a little over $40 a month, stormwater management for almost $27, and the remainder is Portland Harbor Superfund at about $0.59 a month. And we also have a low-income program, and qualifying low-income customers receive discounts of almost $30 per month off their bills. The commercial sector is a little more complicated. I'll just hit some of the highlights here. The sanitary sewage volume rate is increasing by about 3.4%, stormwater management by about 3.3%. Industrial extra strength rates, that's the strength of the constituents in sanitary sewage, is up by a bit more than that, 4.5% for BOD and 4.4% for suspended solids. And finally, the Portland Harbor Superfund rates are up quite a bit more, although they're a very small percentage of the bill. And that's really not program cost increases. That's last year we used some fund balance to buy down the rates a bit, and we've allocated a little bit of costs this year that we should have allocated last year but did not. But the overall goal has been that bill increase of 3.6%. So there's a little bit going on in the background. For our other charges, As Commissioner Fish mentioned, we're proposing to increase the sanitary system development charge to a 100% cost recovery in response to a very thoughtful piece and recommendation CUB did several months ago. That allows us to decrease our rate proposal by about 0.2%. So that goes immediately to residential rate relief. Other fees, the stormwater system development charges were at 100% cost recovery, so they're going up by a fairly nominal amount, 3.5%. And other plan check and land use review fees increased by approximately 4%. To give you an idea of where we are in terms of our bills as compared to other cities, we're about where we were last year, even with the proposed increase. We're kind of middle of the range for this sample we've selected. Of these cities, Gresham and Lake Oswego are not CSO cities. I believe the others are. And our distinguishing characteristic here is that we are done with our CSO control program. All of these other cities have further work to do. And so you will see their bills, I think, increasing relative to ours. And finally, I just wanted to point out, the results of the work we've been doing over the last several years to try and control our rate increases. You can see that off post-CSO from rate increases that are in the 6% plus range, we've worked steadily downward. We're showing now in the current financial plan 3.6% or lower over the forecast interval for rate increases. And the reason that's still above inflation is that we still have a lot of work to do to maintain the system, and so we're spending a lot on those more than 1,200 miles of sewer pipe that are 80-plus years old. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Thanks, Jim. Questions?
Mayor, we're going to try to do this more efficiently this year, if it's okay with you. We have the BES presentation, council questions.
Yep.
Then we'll shift to the Water Bureau presentation, council questions.
And then take testimony.
Then we'll give Janice Thompson of CUB the privilege of coming up and giving her thoughts, and then move to public testimony.
Well. That's good. That's great. Thanks, Jim.
And now we'll introduce David Schaff, the director of the Water Bureau, who will walk us through their proposed rate increases.
Great, thanks. Good afternoon. Thank you. I am David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau, and with me is Cecilia Hoon. She is the finance director for the Portland Water Bureau. The material I intend to present today will look very similar because it's very much the same as what we presented to you in our rate hearing in March. We've had very little in the way of change. So I will work my way through it as quickly and as efficiently as I can. Our overall resource requirements are $211 million. Most of those numbers are relatively self-explanatory. There are one or two that you may not understand immediately. So, for instance, on the other fees and charges of $5.7 million, those are for mains and services. So when we do petition mains for developments, when we do new services for new houses, that's what other fees and charges consist of. And on other revenues and resources, that's primarily interagency agreements, our interest earnings, cell site leases, the consortium dues that we get from the other members of the Regional Water Suppliers Consortium, our overall fund balance, and our rate stabilization transfer. On the requirements, $211.7 million. The primary other example that I want to put out there is the other expenditures of 8.3. That's primarily the GFOH, the general fund overhead, about $4.7 million, and the pension obligation bonds, $3.6 million. Our full-time equivalents went up by one-half of an FTE. We modified an office support specialist half-time to a full-time. We did make our ranger full-time, and we cut an office support specialist in our customer service department. So, like with Jim, we have a number of rate drivers. I'm going to walk through them a little bit. our the driving rates down, surplus fund balance. We ended with prior year budget savings and increased revenues from SDCs, mains, and services installations. So the economy is picking up, and we're getting more revenue for SDCs, mains, and services. Lower bond rate. We issued $85 million in revenue bonds in December at 3.2%. When I was sitting here last year at this time, the projection was 6%, so that was a definite benefit. Inflation, that one should probably be an up arrow and a down arrow. Obviously, inflation does drive our costs up, but in this case, when we were sitting here last year, the projection was 2.5%. It came in at 2.1%. So we got a little bit. We did increase, but it didn't increase as much. Lower retail demand does tend to drive our rates up. As you know, we're a relatively fixed cost system, so even if we produce less water, it costs about the same amount to produce that amount of water. We've reduced our overall demand by 0.9 CCF for the upcoming fiscal year. This year so far, we're pretty close to plan. We're hoping that we will be seeing our demand flatten out so that we can stop chasing that downward number, and eventually we anticipate that as Portland grows, demand will start to increase a little bit. And then finally, our capital improvement program is a rate driver. We're doing a lot of distribution system repairs, rehabilitation, pipes, hydrants, pump stations. You see us out in the field a lot. And then, of course, completing some of those big projects like the reservoirs, the upcoming Tabor adjustments, the interstate facility rehabilitation that we've recently finished or are completing. So a summary, our retail rate increase is going to go up about 7% or about $2.07 a month for our typical residential user. That's a family that uses about 3,740 gallons a month or 5 CCF. Our system development charges are going up for about $152. Now, our system, our SDCs are based on the size of the meter. And some of them are going up 7%. There's one going down 6.9%, and there's some that are going up 8.5%. It's based on the size of the meter. The $152 increase is for the typical single-family residential dwelling with a 5/8 inch meter. And then our fixed fees and charges mostly are going up in general at around that 7% rate, but they will vary because we are a cost of service system. We have some charges that are going down. We have some that are going up slightly more than that. The intent, though, is to capture, as Jim was saying, the full cost of service and accounts for the increase in inflation, materials, and supplies. This you've seen before. We just like to continue to remind you that water is a very good value. We provide almost 2 gallons, 1.9 gallons of water for a penny. So how are our rates going to affect our typical customers? Typical residential customer will see a monthly change of approximately $2.07. So that's the typical 5 CCF. Our qualifying low-income customers will see an increase of $1.04. The low-income discount is 50%. We have medium-sized commercial customers, so that's a grocery store like an Albertsons or a chain restaurant, will go up about $28, a little over and change. On a monthly basis. And then we have our large commercial customers, somebody like the Port of Portland that uses almost 15,000 CCF a month, will see an increase of about $3,500. How do we do when you compare ourselves to other utilities that most Portland residential customers have? We do very well. We're one of the lowest costs of the utilities that most of us use, electricity, cable, cell phones, etc. I do recognize that when you put water and sewer and sanitary together, we're up toward the top, but you're getting three different services for that overall cost.
David, can you go back to that for a second?
Yeah, I will try. Yes.
I'll talk to you later, but I'm thinking of switching my cell phone provider.
Mine's cheaper than that. And how do we compare among other utilities? We look both regionally and nationally. This particular graph shows you the regional graph. This is the one of the ones that has changed since we were here in March. We've updated it to show not only our current and proposed, but we've updated it to show either the current, the new rates for some of our other utility neighbors, or their proposed rates. They're in the same process that we are of looking at their budgets on an annual basis. So we look right about in the middle. And if you were to look at this on a national basis, Black and Veatch does a survey, a very comprehensive survey, every 2 years. We're right smack in the middle, and that's right around where we expect to be. And then finally, we were talking a little bit about SDCs, how do we compare? We have some of the lowest SDCs in the region, and that's because mostly our system is built. The increases that we do have are related to the new systems that are coming on board that we're applying to those SDCs. But we have a very low SDC amount for water utilities in this region. And that concludes my presentation, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. Or if you stump me, that's why I have Cecilia.
Mayor, perhaps we should have Cub come up and testify, then then ask questions of any of the panelists, and then move to public testimony.
Okay.
Janice
Thank
Thompson,
you.
Would you come forward? And David, while we're setting up, we've been reading about droughts in parts of Oregon and the country. Where are we year to year in terms of rainfall in the Bull Run?
We are slightly below, but we're pretty close to our normal rainfall amount. Our reservoirs are currently full, and if we get what we typically get in the springtime for rain, we will be fine. And if we don't, we have the second largest source of finished drinking water in the state of Oregon, our groundwater system. So we're actually in very good shape compared to a lot of the rest of Oregon that relies on snowpack. If you've been tracking the news, snowpack is almost non-existent. And so there are a number of systems that are going to be struggling this year, both in Oregon and in California. But we're not one of them.
Thanks very much. Janice, welcome.
Great. Janice Thompson, Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. So you have some written testimony. I'm not going to go through every bit of it, but at least we'll zip through it so you see the pieces. I want to just begin with thanks for adopting Cub's recommendation to true up was I think a good term that the mayor's budget uses. The sewer development system charge for BES. As Commissioner Fish noted, as you combine both of the rates, we're at that 4.66%. As you know, Cub has a long time history advocating for residential ratepayers in the energy arena. And just to put that figure into perspective, in the last year, the three natural gas utilities serving Oregon had rate increases ranging from 2 to 7.8%. So the reality in this arena is that utility rates go up. And so then it really becomes a matter of looking for every single opportunity to rein in those increases, and that was the goal with the SDC suggestion, for example. In the earlier testimony, also raised some other cost recovery concerns, and those I know are on the agenda for Commissioner Fish and future work of the new or the coming soon Public Utility Board or PUB. The second section just provides some thoughts on, with the new kind of oversight situation coming up, how things could be timed more efficiently from kind of a utility staff perspective and just, you know, kind of fitting in things. I think it's all just, you know, you can kind of review that again. I think the bottom line is, you know, CUB offers this suggestion, recognizing that, you know, this is kind of a new period of time for utility oversight, and so, you know, it's by no means a recommendation that we see as being cast in stone, but to just get that conversation going. So the turning to the Public Utility Board, CUB is very committed to its recruitment, and will convey suggestions to Commissioner Fish's office on, you know, relative priorities. The question has sometimes come up. It's like, well, if there's this new pub, how does CUB fit in? And I think the analogy of a three-legged stool can be helpful here. Prior to CUB being in the mix, there were kind of two legs of a stool, the city council and the previous internal oversight, which had started to face, you know, significant effectiveness issues. So I think that with the pub, that, you know, pre-existing second internal oversight leg of the stool will be stronger, and then CUB, and, you know, has been more recently the third leg of the school of the stool, providing outside independent. And one of the things in this regard I've mentioned is CUBs will continue to monitor and make suggestions for the city council, but we'll do the same with the pub as well. So I think we see our oversight as being just becoming multifaceted.
One note? There's potentially another leg of the stool, which is the Bureau Advisory, Budget Advisory Committees. And as my colleagues know, when we come to council with the formal architecture for the new pub, it will replace both the PERB and the BACS. So it will be a permanent standing committee of budget oversight and utility oversight merged into one body with dedicated staff.
And that's, I think, a really good example of what I meant when I said the pub as the new internal oversight will be stronger. So one topic that has come up is, what does CUB mean by a phrase, you know, this, least cost, least risk? And understandably, you know, both bureaus had some questions about what that was, and I also just really needed to dig in and learn about the analytical tools used by both the bureaus to evaluate, like, infrastructure assessment and manage risk and make economic and, you know, triple bottom line assessments of capital investment alternatives. And so that discussion on page 3 just kind of highlights that least risk, or least cost, least risk, is kind of a term of art in energy utilities, and it's kind of from that perspective that CUB has used it. But this kind of describes how that does and doesn't work or fit quite in the public utility arena. And the bottom line is, I think it's fair to say that what both bureaus do is use a set of analytical tools that are grounded in the same principles and methods that CUB uses. So it's, they're different and equivalent. So it's just, you know, like I say, it just has been, it came out during the Blue Ribbon Commission. It's like, well, what is this least cost? Should the bureaus be doing this least cost, least risk? Well, I think it's fair to say that they are. It's just, given that it's a public utility and not a private utility, the terminology is different. So then I just highlight some upcoming issues, both for BES and for the Water Bureau. At the top of page 5, there's kind of a little box there to highlight that another pub-related issue, which is that it will not replace and should not replace advisory groups of both the bureaus that are either site-specific like related to the Columbia Boulevard wastewater treatment plant, which is going to be, I think, an issue for the pub down the line, as well as just project-specific, you know, ad hoc advisory committees. And that is actually a point that was, you know, made clear in the ordinance as well. But it's going to be, I think, a challenge for Commissioner Fish that I'm happy to try to assist with in terms of just making sure that there's clarity. And I think one way to think about it is the pub will focus on bigger picture oversight with a financial perspective. The project and site-specific advisory groups are totally the groups to continue to provide, like, the neighborhood. You're like, oh, you want to do this here? This is how, you know it's going to affect us up the road. In terms of, and then again, turning to the Water Bureau, there's kind of a list of longer-term challenges that are coming up. There's a longer discussion about the challenge of which is occurring across the country. This is not anything unique to Portland, but, you know, really getting a handle on retail water use trends. So that's discussed on page 6 and 7 with kind of two highlights, or excuse me, two handouts that kind of accompany that. There's also a discussion of residential monthly meter reads and how that, you know, it's a big cost. It's a significant capital cost that I think there's a lot of conversation about, well, it's coming, and CUB actually is not at all opposed to the notion of it's coming, but I think there needs to be some pretty careful thinking about how it stacks up against potentially other capital improvement needs, particularly needs that perhaps better address or address higher levels of risk. So that is discussed there with, again, another handout. And I've mentioned in the past concerns with regard to the customer service, the management of the
Kayenta,
thank you. The Kayenta billing system being housed at the Revenue Bureau and not within the Water Bureau. And I think that's just something to continue to take a look at. And then that is followed by a few updates, quick summaries of things that I think I mentioned a year ago at this hearing that have been resolved and dealt with, if not necessarily by CUB, but other folks, which is great. So just to not to go into exhaustive detail, but to give you a highlight of what's in here.
Candace, thank you for your very thoughtful testimony, and as always, we'll go through it very carefully, and then there'll be a feedback loop to report back to CUB. I kind of, for the purposes of this hearing, I feel like my role is to be like a traffic cop and ask one question that's, I think, above all, the most important to you, which is the council made a commitment that CUB would have a free and unfettered hand to do its work, have access to the Bureau staff, books and records. And have you had the kind of access that you need to do the job that you said you wanted to do?
Yes. I mean, I feel, I like one of the reasons in that table one and the discussion about thinking through the sequence of events for the next budget cycle is trying to be aware of when Bureau staff are getting asked questions from multiple sources and trying to be sensitive to that. So I feel like I am mindful of, like, so I can't think of what it was, but there was something that I, you know, knowing that the bureaus were, you know, really going full bore back in January to finalize their proposed budget, there was a question that there were a couple questions that I felt like I couldn't wait and they responded to. But when I could, I try to be mindful of their time constraints. The there are some, we've worked out confidentiality issues, and I'll just highlight that that topic could also become a concern related to the pub. But I've been very impressed with both the responsiveness and the quality of the input and response to questions by utility staff.
Well, thank you. And in terms of the schedule for next year's budget deliberation, the mayor's commitment and my commitment is to have the pub in place by August so that it can begin to function with the next budget cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they're going to have dedicated staff, two dedicated staff people, so that's going to, I think, address some of the concerns you've raised. But the sort of fine-tuning of the sort of balance between public hearings, input, when CUB comes in, work sessions and the like, that's a work in progress, and we'll certainly take a good look at your suggestions. The goal, obviously, is to have as much transparency as possible. And I think in the next fiscal year, we'll test drive how this works,
exactly.
Get some feedback, and we'll continue to improve it. So thank you very much. Mayor, one more question to the Bureau directors, then we'll open up to questions. To David and Jim, would you just remind us your proposed rate increase relative to the forecast for this year?
Ours is 7 versus 11.3.
So the forecast was 11.3. And for some of the reasons you highlight in the PowerPoint, interest rates,
the bond sale,
and the like, you scrub that down to 7%. And Jim, roughly?
3.6, and I think it was probably about 3.9 or 4.
Forecast was close to 4, and you got it down to 3.6. Yeah. And of course, the SDC
helped.
True up gave us a 0.20. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions for either CUB or the bureaus? Well, thank you all. Thanks very much. Let's take public testimony. Anyone signed up?
We have two people signed up, John Gibbon and Dee White.
Come on up.
I'm John Gibbon. Member of PERB, which is about ready to go out of existence, thankfully a year early on my 6-year term. So
thanks
for the reprieve.
Thank you for the service.
And I really came today, I can speak on any part of the PERB questions. I can answer your question, at least my impressions of where we're going, even on the garbage rates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My sense of it is with the garbage rates that the issues will be if recyclables rebound and the markets grow for that again, that's going to help us. And the real problem with those rates in the last, or those markets in the last few months, has not been the actual markets, it's been the access to them produced by port problems along the West Coast and materials moving out. So as that resolves itself, I think it'll move ahead. The issue about the fuels was interesting, because in the past I would have said that if we had an uptick in fuel costs, we'd be looking at, regular fuel costs, but we're getting real green with our fuel costs. You know, the compressed natural gas is becoming less and less world market for us in America, and more what we produce on our own fields. And the other side of it is a lot of the other haulers are using, green diesel, and, that's a different issue. So hopefully the fuel costs won't be create so much of a dynamic on it. One last point, though, on costs related to solid waste rates. Metro's Bob Stacey was here last night giving you good news about safe streets, but they also have got some decisions to make in the next few years about whether they go with another landfill or they seek some other way to deal with solid waste in the future, and that may be pretty impactful on these rates. So on that subject, that's my thoughts on solid waste and recycling. I really came prepared mostly to talk about stormwater and the impacts on the BS budget. I wanted to show you something. I came last night to tell you you should work on the single, you should fund that single family study. And this is one of the reasons why. If you look at this map, this is the work that Commissioner Novick and Commissioner Fish's people have been doing in Southwest Portland dealing with stormwater. Could I have a few more
minutes? Yes, yeah, I'm going to ask you what that map's about. So.
That is connectivity and stormwater with an overlay of the single-family housing zones in Southwest Portland. Huh. We're trying to build smarter streets in Southwest Portland that tie the neighborhood together and provide stormwater service and don't over-demand anything more than we need given the level of development we have and anticipate. And that's the kind of thing, if we know where we're going with single family, we can make smarter decisions about the streets, we can make smarter decisions about the stormwater, and maybe cooperatively the neighborhoods and the bureaus can get some things done in that regard. On the other side of BES and dealing with capital costs, I also am land use chair for the Markham neighborhood, so I always get the noise review notice this month. Four items on the noise review public hearings this month. One of them, or two of them, were review of a noise variance for the Hollywood Grant Park sewer project. And another one was a renew of a noise variance for the Lower Powell Green Street sewer project. In both those projects, they're adding Green Streets, 12 in Grant Park, 6 sumps, 22 Green Street planters in the Powell projects. But those are your capital costs that we were talking about and are driving BES rates. Again, I would suggest to you that what we decide to do in the single-family neighborhoods are important because how this is done now and how it's laid out is based on the assumption of how dense are we going to be, what do we need to build up to as a maximum in those single-family neighborhoods. If we make changes to that, we may get some savings. And if you've got any questions about the Water Bureau, Water Bureau is near and dear to my heart. I was struck last night when Commissioner
Lindbergh
spoke that it wasn't only a few years, like 3 years between the time he started in City Hall, that I started coming and talking about issues in City Hall about Water Bureau. So I think Water Bureau's going in the right direction. My only plea would be to be sure to think about resiliency, especially for the West Side as we continue ahead with the Water Bureau. We shouldn't rest on our laurels. We've got to have some resiliency in our system getting across the river. And I think we're headed there. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all your volunteer hours.
Yeah, John, you were one of my nominees to be on the PERB, and I want to thank you for your diligence and your resiliency in sticking with it and been a very consistent presence here at budget and rate hearings, and I really appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Let me echo that, and thank you for your service, and we'll have an appropriate way later, I think, to thank all the members of the PERB for what they've done. And on the question of resilience, one of the first issues that we'll put to the PUB is that question, and we'll ask Director Merlo and others to spend some time helping to frame the issue, because it is something where, in my view, we've been playing Russian roulette with some of our pipes that cross the river. And while it's easy for people to say we should keep deferring that, we defer at our peril because we can never anticipate when there'll be a seismic event which disrupts our system.
Well, the one thing I'd say about that whole transition, I appreciated Janice's comments today, recognizing that there's a need for the neighborhood and a need for neighborhood involvement, neighborhood input. I have told Commissioner Fish, my goal is now I get to go back and be just a neighborhood advocate. I always felt a little uncomfortable on PURB because I was wearing sort of Janice's hat, trying to look out for the ratepayers and at the same time look out for my neighborhood. And now I can just, you'll see me again, but not as an advisor, more of as an advocate. So,
fair enough.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm Dee White, and I live on 49th Avenue Southeast. I oppose the 7% water rate increase, and I oppose the 7% increase on the base charge, which is not part of the water rate. It seems that raising the base charge every year is an arbitrary decision that the public has no knowledge of and therefore is unable to voice their opinion. From the Portland Bureau Water Bureau website, I quote, "The base charge covers the cost of reading and inspecting meters, servicing customer accounts, and billing. The base charge on our water bills has gone up an eye-popping 62% over the past 10 years, and it is going up 7% this year, according to figures on the city's website. The base charge is quickly approaching the cost of the water on my bill. I went to the rate review meeting in March. I have a printout of the PowerPoint presentation that the Water Bureau gave, and nowhere is the base charge increase of 7% mentioned. In fact, the words base charge are nowhere in the presentation. Is the base charge paying for the billing system fiasco? Is this why the base charge is escalating at this very troubling rate? Why is no information available to the public justifying these increases? In 2005, we paid $6.16 per month for the base charge. This year, we will be paying $11.91 per month, and there is nothing anywhere that explains or justifies these increases. Are we supposed to believe that these fixed costs have gone up 62% over the past 10 years? Portland's population increased by about 9% over the past decade. The cumulative rate of inflation over the past decade is 20.9%. The Water Bureau's base charge has increased 62% over the past decade. This does not make sense. This is yet another example why the Water Bureau and implicitly the City of Portland cannot be trusted. This is why ratepayers continuously complain about the lack of transparency from our elected officials. I would like to make a request of the city auditor, and I will do this in writing, to take a quick look at what I believe is a base charge issue. Here's my last water bill. I paid $33.14 for water and $31.17 for the base charge. Those are fixed charges, so in order to bill me, read my meter, inspect my meter, and handle my customer service calls, which I never do, I'm getting charged as much for that as I am for water, and that just doesn't make sense. So I'd like to ask you, Commissioner Fish, and perhaps you could ask David Schaff, could you explain to us today why the base charge has doubled in the past 10 years, and why does billing and reading my water meter cost almost as much as I pay for water?
Thank you.
Good questions.
Thanks very much.
We'll bring David back up.
Thanks very much. Okay, anyone else want to testify? So let's bring staff back up and address that question and any others that council may have. You want to address that base charge question first?
Well, the base charge is, as Dee described, generally for the recovery of the costs of reading the meter on a quarterly or monthly basis, depending on what kind of an account you are, the customer service piece, the billing, which we have seen an increase in now that we have the monthly statement programs. It's the entire process now, including the collections. And for somebody like Dee, who pays her bill on a regular basis, on a quarterly basis, she probably has zero contact with us. We have 500 calls a day. So our base charge increases have generally matched our overall commodity increases. And it's one of the things that many bureaus or utilities are looking at modifying. We have not done that. We've had several conversations with the PURB over the years about modifying our base charge and readjusting it. And one of the things that one of the problems with doing that is it'll have a significant or a more impactful it'll have more impact on residential customers, which is one of the reasons why we have not looked at it just yet. The base charge for a large commercial customer is the exact same charge that you and I pay. And so, as Dee correctly stated, the base charge is a fairly significant part of our overall typical, for our typical customer, but it's a tiny, tiny, tiny slice for our large customer like Siltronics. They don't even notice the cost of the base charge. So we are looking at it. One of the things that we're looking at is as we become, as our water demand goes down, our revenue needs remain the same and or go up because of, as Janice was saying, utilities cost more. And we're looking at perhaps putting a base charge in that includes a certain amount of water commodity as an assumption, and then the commodity rate on top. So we're looking at possibly making the base charge even a bigger part of the bill overall, so that we have consistent, predictable, and reliable revenue that we need for running the system.
You know, but what about that point about the rate of inflation? I mean, those costs, even given the model that you described, which are sort of maybe unavoidably unfair in the sense that a large commercial customer has the same base cost as a small residential one. I get that. So as in her example, her base charge is nearly equal to her volume charge because the base charge is what it is. But putting that aside, why would that base charge or base cost be increasing faster than the rate of inflation?
Well, in part, that's part of the overall approach of what we're trying to do, and that is catching up to a lot of the work that we've needed to do for years. We're replacing, I can't remember exactly the number of meters that we're replacing every year, but we are replacing more and more and more meters on a regular basis. That's part of the overall cost. Then, Cecilia, do you have anything you want to add to it?
Yeah, Mayor. A few years back, the decision was to move away from the cost of service methodology on the base charge to increase that base charge rate at the same rate as the volumetric rate, so that there was there would be less confusion as far as describing the rate increase. You know, kind of dialing back 2000 rate reform, that methodology for the base charge also changed. I mean, it used to recover the whole gamut of what is considered to be in the base charge billing, meter, the cost of maintaining the meter, indirect costs, those came out. And there was a shift to lower, you know, the idea is to lower the base charge for the residential customer. So sort of moving forward, a couple of years back, we have moved away from that methodology to increase the base charge at the same rate as the volumetric rate. And we have looked at going back to a true cost of service for the base charge, which would include the typical cost in providing the service of billing and collection. But we found that, and that we were looking at that at the same time we were looking at potentially going to monthly billing, which would, of course, increase the cost. And that we found that the cost to the residential customers was actually going to be even higher. We have not looked at it. We didn't go to monthly billing, and we have not looked at the actual cost of what the base charge would be to the residential customer in recent years.
And it may be something that the PUB wants us to look at as well as CUB.
Yeah, I was going to suggest just that, actually.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
We accept the suggestion. We've gone through, I think, four public budget hearings now, a rate hearing review, and now this hearing. We've had one citizen come forward and raise an issue about the base charge. Well, that's why we have public process, even though only one person has raised it. It's worth looking at. Mm-hmm. And frankly, as I've looked at this question of base charges, there are winners and losers depending on how you construct the system. During the water district fight, it occurred to me that we had some friends who were large water users who were afraid that we were going to go to a more progressive system that charged them a higher rate than we did others. There's a lot of issues about winners, losers, and cost shifting. There's been different approaches over time. I think we should embrace the mayor's suggestion that with the pub, we take a fresh look at what, given what we project, you know, are our needs going forward, what makes sense, recognizing that we want to lessen the impact on residential customers and maybe adjust it so that large water users pay a little bit more. But that's a policy question that we can debate.
I'm glad Janice is here to hear that discussion, too. So it would be great to have a couple sets of eyes on that question. So, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
So, Mayor, before we gavel this closed, mm-hmm. may I make a closing statement?
Sure, please.
I know that we're going to go to a second reading. But
yep, we've got to go to a second reading next week. But
This is the last official hearing, I think, where Jim Hagerman will be appearing before us and presenting. And we'll have a chance before he departs. But Jim is not only going to be giving his seat to the new director, but Jim is also going to be retiring this summer.
So we'll
have an opportunity later to fuss over him. But as I've mentioned to you, my colleagues, before, Jim did not seek this assignment of doing double duty, two of the most difficult assignments in our bureau. And he took on the additional responsibilities as acting director, and he has given exemplary service to the city. And I could not be prouder of the work he's done and more grateful for the work. And again, we'll have another occasion to embarrass him more, but I want to just acknowledge this is the last official presentation and really thank him.
Thank you, Jim.
Mayor, I also just want to acknowledge the great service of the PERB, and there will be a proper recognition for the history of that organization and the individuals who have given so much time. I want to also acknowledge the CUB. It was, after all, Steve Novick who originally had the idea of reaching out and asking the CUB to play this role, and I think with every passing week, we've gotten a sense of how valuable it has been in terms of oversight. But I just want to, I know we're going to vote next week, and it's a little unusual to make a statement, but I want to just offer this observation. The unsung hero of modern cities is their basic infrastructure. Our water, sewer, roads on the public side, power and communications on the private side. Like many people in our community, I don't give much thought to what it takes for me to flush a toilet and have wastewater disappear, or to flip on a light switch in the middle of the night. In water and the Bureau of Environmental Services, we have over 1,000 hardworking employees and hundreds of miles of pipes. And though no one likes to see their utility bill go up, me including, we have a dedicated source of funding to make sure that our vital services are expanded and maintained. Commissioner Novick, our streets are also a vital part of our infrastructure. And unlike water and BES, PBOT has a structural issue on how to pay for creating safe routes to school for our children, and how to pay for thousands of miles for streets. And so I just wanted to close this hearing by renewing my commitment to you, Steve, to work with you to find a solution for how we can pay for our vital infrastructure that Portland depends on every day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you. Well, that's a great note on which to end this hearing, so we'll pass these two items to second reading, and we're adjourned until next week. Thank you very much.
See if you're awake.
Oh, okay.